The attorney accused of aggravated sexual assault gets a bond. The Parkland shooter judge gets a public reprimand. And don't live at this apartment complex if you own anything of value, including your life. A bad man has been arrested in Austin, Texas. Hey, pot smokers, they're coming for your guns. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, everyone. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. You know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't. Like if you do. Leave me a comment and hit that little bell. And remember, you can listen to us anytime on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Now, I want you to take a look at this. I want to read you a comment about crimetalksearch.com. All right? This is from a subscriber. We've blocked out her handle, so to speak. But it says, I always thought Scott's ad for Crime Talk Search was just for profit and sort of idiotic until I tried it. I was hiring someone online the night before I decided to spend the $28 plus $4 for a report. Other than it taking a ridiculous amount of time with seemingly silly pop-ups, sort of clickbait warnings, turned out he had a criminal record that was a bit scary. Then somebody else responded, it completely works and is worth every penny. I agree. So don't take it from me. Take it from your fellow subscribers. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up for that background subscription today. You never know what you're going to find. You probably spend more money getting a cup of coffee and a muffin at the local Starbucks for what this costs. And it could potentially save your life, your business, your career. You got to know with whom you are dealing. Crimetalksearch.com. First on the docket, that attorney got himself in some trouble. Well, he wasn't an attorney when he got himself in trouble, but, you know, I guess he was probably an aspiring attorney. So this guy, Matthew Nilo, pled not guilty to 3 counts of aggravated rape, 2 counts of kidnapping, 1 count of assault with the intent to rape, and 1 count of indecent assault and battery. His bail has been set at $500,000. And if he can, in fact, post that bond, he will have to be on GPS monitoring and stay away from any of the alleged victims. Don't harass, molest, intimidate, retaliate against anyone. So it is alleged at the time of the alleged rapes that the Boston Police Department issued a warning that a man was attacking women after offering them a ride home. Well, federal agents allege that a New Jersey attorney committed a series of these violent rapes in Boston after tracking down his relative's DNA on a commercial genealogy database. So Matthew Nilo, he's now 35, and he was arrested last week on suspicion of these sexual assaults. And there's also a couple going back to 2007 and 2008. Police took samples from 3 of the women that were, in fact, raped on the Terminal Street in Boston at the time of the incident, and they possessed the glove of a 4th victim who said that she poked her assailant in the eye while wearing the glove. All 3 DNA samples matched the same profile, leading officers obviously to believe that it was the same man committing these assaults. And then the FBI confirmed 15 years later that the DNA belonged to Nilo, after comparing these samples to one from a glass that he drank out from a corporate event. But there were multiple hurdles they had to first figure out. The investigation initially stalled because the DNA obtained from each of the women failed to flag any potential matches on the federal CODIS system. That's everybody that has their DNA sample collected when they get convicted or arrested. It goes into that system. And since he'd never been arrested, he wasn't in the system. But the officers kept the case open, and using the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative, which is a federal program designed to help process a backlog of untested rape kits, the investigation was basically able to take off. So the Boston Police Department doesn't have a backlog of rape kits, but has instead used the initiative $2.5 million federal grant to reexamine unsolved cases that present the greatest threat to the public safety. So the police request the DNA be cross-referenced by the FBI using the Forensic Investigative Genetic Genealogy. They did this last year. Boston Police Department detectives submitted the DNA samples obtained from the 3 women to GED Match and Family Tree DNA. two of the only genealogical websites which allow law enforcement access to their databases. And because the databases are quite small, the FBI could only search about 2 million people, meaning they had to either, well, get lucky, really what it boils down to. So now consumers using these sites must consent before their information is shared with law enforcement, and they use the sites to trace their ancestry to locate other relatives. Well, GED Match and FamilyTree DNA then provided a list of relatives and the percentage of DNA they share with the sample submitted by the police, which led them to Nilo back in April of this year. The commercial genealogy companies can search for up to 1 million DNA markers using single nucleotide polymorphous, which not STR, DNA, creating a much wider pool of relatives to sift through. Historically, law enforcement had to rely on federal and local DNA databases, which contain the profiles of people that have been previously arrested, like we talked about. But if a suspect hadn't been apprehended, then their DNA wouldn't be in that CODIS system and obviously wouldn't be identified. So once a suspect is identified through the genealogy companies, who provide names and how strong the match actually might be, police then attempt to take a DNA sample to confirm a direct match. This often takes place surreptitiously, with, in this case, officers tracking down Mr. Nidal in New York for at least a month when he was identified as a suspect back in April. Court records reveal that the FBI was able to obtain various utensils and drinking glasses that they actually observed Mr. Milo use, and they then collected those items. And this one was a corporate event. The agents obtained a DNA profile from one of the glasses that matched the profile of the three rapes on Terminal Street. And after obtaining a match from the glass, they tested a sample found on the glove of the fourth woman, and determined that the profile was 314 times more likely to belong to Nilo than to any other male in the population. So, obviously we give Mr. Nilo the presumption of innocence, but what are the odds that his DNA just happened to be in these three ladies and on this lady's glove who fought off the attack by sticking him in the eye, and they still had his glove? I mean, I understand things happen, but he's got a tough road to hoe. Whoever his attorney is going to be, good luck on that one. It's going to be a tough one, no doubt. Next, the Parkland judge gets her public censure, reprimand. That's the fancy word. So the Parkland shooter judge has been issued a public reprimand, and that is for the Broward County, Florida judge who provided over the penalty phase and sentencing at the Parkland shooter trial. And the disciplinary board says that it is in the interest of justice that the panel concluded after reviewing videos and transcripts of the jurist courtroom's outburst and roundly condemned hug of the prosecutors. So Judge Scherr was criticized far and wide for hugging prosecutors after Nicholas Cruz was sentenced to life without parole for murdering 15 students, a teacher, and a coach, and wounding many more at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on February 14th of 2018, back on Valentine's Day. Both the hug of the prosecution and, at times, intemperate conduct towards the defense while on the bench, such as wrongfully accusing a defense lawyer of threatening her family, warrants a public scolding. Now, the investigative panel of the Florida Judicial Qualifications Commission recommended in a report containing a findings of fact. The disciplinary proceeding against the Honorable Elizabeth Scherr found probable cause that Judge Scherr violated canons 1, 2A, 3B, 3B, paragraph 4, 5, and 9 of the Code of Judicial Conduct. Generally, those are violations of rules that state a judge shall uphold the integrity and independence of the judiciary. A judge shall avoid impropriety and the appearance of impropriety in all of the judge's activities. And a judge shall perform the duties of judicial officers impartially and diligently. And they determined that Judge Scherr violated these rules in four ways. You chastise defense counsel for the time and manner with which the counsel announced the conclusion of the defense mitigation presentation. Then Secondly, Cruz's defense lawyer raised arguments attempting to curtail vitriolic comments directed at them during sentencing by family members, but the judge failed to take the action to stop the comments or enforce the prosecution's obligation under Section 921.143 of the Florida statutes. Now, sure, dressed down a defense lawyer and shamed him, despite wrongfully claiming that he had threatened her children. And then after sentencing, Cruz sure hugged prosecutors on the case who worked in the office where she used to prosecute cases, and she was still wearing her judicial robe. Wrong. No. Can't do it. Now, I remember when this happened, and everyone says, oh, she's just a judge. She's doing great, blah, blah. I thought she was a terrible judge. She is not a good judge. And you know, she resigned. If you want to be an advocate, don't become a judge. Go sit on the prosecution side of the table. She was not a good judge. I get it. It was a tough case, emotional case. She was not a good judge. And at the conclusion of the sentencing hearing, the judge stepped down from the bench in your judicial robe and embraced prosecution team members. You also embraced victims and family members of the victims. The panel, made up of attorneys and judges, noted that Scheer was disqualified from another death penalty case in April due to her decision to hug the prosecution in the Cruz case. And according to the panel, Judge Scheer claimed that she also offered to hug the defense lawyers at the end of Cruz's trial. Now, Judge Scheer admitted in a stipulation that she violated each of the aforementioned judicial conduct rules. She admitted it was wrong. Judges are supposed to call balls and strikes. They may get paid by the state, but that doesn't matter. They have to simply call balls and strikes. And if you can't be an umpire, you want to be a coach, you want to be an advocate, then go join one of the sides. But you can't be a judge. So although I'm sure she's a lovely lady, doesn't mean you make a good judge. Bottom line. So like I said, Scheer didn't contest the panel's recommendations, and she accepted and agrees to a public reprimand. Now, as recently as May, Judge Scheer said that she was resigning from the bench to pursue an interesting new career opportunity. The Florida Judicial Qualifications Commission specified that Scheer's resignation was not a condition of her agreement to a public reprimand, and the commission is mindful that Cruz's proceedings were highly emotional and contentious. The prosecution sought to put defendants Cruz to death for his crimes, which took the lives of 17 people. I get it. It's emotional. It's a death penalty case. Obviously, the publicity surrounding the case created stress and tension for all participants. However, regardless of the gravity of the accusations or level of attention given this matter, the commission expects that judges will ensure due process, order, and appropriate decorum, and will always act with dignity and respect and to promote the integrity and impartiality of the judiciary. In limited instances, during this unique and lengthy case, Judge Scheer allowed her emotions to overcome her judgment. I got beat up in the comments when I said I didn't think that was appropriate for the judge to do what she did. I don't think the defense attorney, you know, threatened her. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? But I mean, get it. Some people could be good judges, maybe civil judges, but this is not the case for her. I'm sorry she got reprimanded. I don't think she resigned because of that. She'll probably be like the next Judge Judy on TV or something. But the reality of it is she's not a good judge. Just saying. All right, don't live here if you have anything of value, including your own life or your family. So Terrence Montgomery and his neighbor, Cedric Verner, both are being evicted after confronting armed thieves at their apartment complex. And Mr. Montgomery said that his neighbor called him on the morning of May 22nd after he saw surveillance footage that showed individuals trying to steal his girlfriend's car. He grabbed his gun before going outside to stop the vehicle from being stolen. Mr. Montgomery said that the robbers began to shoot at him when he went outside his door. He said, quote, "They opened fire, shooting out my neighbor's window," he claimed. "I shot back two or three times." Verner said bullets blasted through his apartment and almost killed his kids by inches while they were lying in bed asleep. He also grabbed his gun and shot back. Well, Mr. Montgomery said that following the confrontation with the alleged car thieves, he received a letter from the Avery Park Leasing Company saying that, guess what? After we received a letter in the mail saying you have got 3 days to vacate the premises. That's right. So neither man has been charged with a crime. Appears as though the people stealing cars and robbing people have not been caught. The leasing company is still pushing to evict them from their apartment. Now, the company said that Mr. Verner and Montgomery were a nuisance and threatened other residents' safety, not to mention the guy shooting at them when they came out of their apartment. And Mr. Verner said someone from the management company told him that he can't stop anyone from coming on the premises and trying to steal anything. Wow. Let me know what you think about this. I mean, you were defending your family, your property. He doesn't shoot until they shoot at him, and then he's getting evicted. That seems like a stretch to me. Hey, it's their apartment complex. Maybe the apartment complex could be sued for failing to provide appropriate security at this particular location, given the rampant crime that is taking place. Yeah, just saying, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of the day, you are on your own. You are on your own. You have to take care of yourself. You have to be able to protect yourself. You're on your own. The police aren't there. The property owners don't want anybody doing anything to protect themselves. Just like, you know, Lululemon saying, we're going to fire people for calling the police or trying to stop somebody from taking their stuff. Well, then why not just open up the whole store for everybody? Tell that to your shareholders too, I guess. Unbelievable. I know, I'm not saying it, but I'm just saying back in the old days out here in the wild, wild west, you didn't mess with another man or woman's property. You stole their horse, you stole their cow. That was a hanging capital offense, ladies and gentlemen. Now everybody just looks at it as stuff. I get it. Let it go. It's stuff. But at the end of the day, it's your stuff. You worked hard for it, and you should be able to protect it. Next, a bad man has been arrested in Texas. So Texas police and the United States Marshals have arrested Raul Meza Jr. in connection with the murder of a former probation officer, Jesse Fraga, who had given Meza a place to stay for years, and of Gloria Lofton, who was found dead in her home back in 2019. Now, Mr. Meza is a convicted child killer who has bounced in and out of prisons for decades. How often have we said that past performance is indicative of future results? Just saying. Anyway, on May 20th, he allegedly strangled Fraga with a belt, stabbed him, and then, you know, severed his spine, obviously prompting a manhunt that ended with the suspect calling police and turning himself in. He said, quote, I think you are looking for me, when he called the police on May 24th, according to the marshals. Now, the Austin police stated that they were looking at Meza in connection with other slayings in the city. Separately, they have stated that those deaths are not linked to a series of drownings at the Lady Bird Lake near Rainy Street. The police said, we have between 8 and 10 cases that kind of fit these similar circumstances and that they're looking at them. But that could obviously grow. So more cases. Austin police have also stated that Meza's arrest has not changed or affected their prior statements that detectives had found no evidence of a serial killer or foul play involved in the Rainy Street and Lady Bird Lake incidents. However, the interim city manager, a guy by the name of Bruce Mills, he was the lead detective on Mr. Meza's 1982 murder conviction for the killing of a woman by the name of Kendra Page. He described Mr. Meza as a serial killer during a news briefing. Now, Meza only served 11 years of a 30-year sentence for Page's 1982 death. And obviously, the city manager believes that justice was not served. Meza should not have been released from prison. This was a travesty of justice. Now, Meza shot and wounded a man during a robbery back in 1975 when he was just 15 years old, and then raped and killed an 8-year-old girl after he got out of prison in early 1980, still a few years before his 21st birthday. His victims have been both male and female. Meza's alleged murder of Fraga would fit the bill of a comfort killer, those who are motivated by profit, drugs, money, or possessions. And after the 80-year-old's murder, Mr. Meza allegedly stole his truck. What a guy, after he severed his spine. Nice guy. Anyway, Mazda was recently staying in a motel off of Highway 35 and surrendered in order to basically turn himself in. And, you know, he's probably institutionalized. Where else is he going to stay? He just murdered the guy that was giving him room and board. Let's go back to prison. Three hots and a cot. He knows where the easy life is. Anyway, details around the additional 8 to 10 investigations involving Mr. Mazda, a little unclear, but detectives said that they were going to hold a briefing on that and that the murders of Lofton and Frege share at least the same characteristics with several unsolved deaths. They also said they linked Mazda's DNA, which is documented in federal databases, to Lofton's murder, prompting questions about the initial investigation and prompting the city's police chief to order a review. Now, the Lady Bird Lake deaths have involved men around 30 who had been drinking on Rainy Street and were later found dead in the water. However, police have said that they don't suspect any foul play in any of those cases. Although these cases are still under investigation and evidence is being analyzed at this time, there is no evidence in any of these cases to support allegations of foul play. That's according to the Austin Police Department. While each incident has occurred at the lake, the circumstances, exact location, and demographics surrounding these cases, okay, bad man arrested, probably shouldn't have been out of prison, just something to think about here, just something to think about. Just saying, truth in sentencing, okay? Most cases in most states, you serve a sentence, unless it is a violent crime, you're going to be eligible at 50%, sometimes earlier. I'm seeing cases now where somebody gets a 10-year sentence and they're out in 2.5 years. Now, it's more likely a drug offense, but that just goes to show you the prisons are full and the numbers don't mean anything. It's like inflation. It just keeps going up and they keep saying we got bigger, bigger sentences. And everybody knows that no one's going to serve a lengthy. Let me know what you think. Are we getting soft on crime? Has it been soft on crime too much? Do we need to go back to hard on crime? Maybe just some common sense? Like if you, you know, commit rape, murder, violent crimes, you need to go to prison until you're too old to get out and harm anybody else. Just a thought. Let me know what you think. Next, pot smokers, they're coming for your guns. Remember that mom who had a 6-year-old and went to school and shot the teacher? Yeah. She now has federal gun charges. So Deja Taylor, the Virginia mom of that 6-year-old boy accused of shooting his elementary school teacher back in January, is facing federal drug and gun charges. An information filed Monday says that Taylor bought a firearm from a gun shop in Grafton, Virginia, back in July of 2022. While she knowing that she was an unlawful user of controlled substances. The document says that Ms. Taylor made a false written statement when filling out paperwork for a gun purchase at Winfrey Firearms. Taylor indicated she was not an unlawful user or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance, when in fact she knew she was an unlawful user of marijuana. Marijuana is legal in Virginia, but federal law requires prospective gun owners to disclose whether they use federally illegal substances like marijuana. Taylor's attorney, a guy by the name of Mr. Ellison, says that Ms. Taylor planned to enter pleas of guilty to the charge, and they are proceeding by information, which saves the government to have to go and get an indictment. There is also a state case pending, but you want to get the federal case done so that you can keep those criminal history points down low on the federal sentencing guidelines. So once they get the federal stuff done and sentenced, then she'll deal with her state case. And like I said, Taylor's 6-year-old shot and wounded a teacher, a woman by the name of Abigail Zerner, back in Newport News on January 6th. Taylor was charged in April with felony neglect and reckless storage of a firearm. A trial was set for August 15th, but like I said, her attorney says that they're going to reach a plea agreement. Felony neglect charge is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. The misdemeanor charge of recklessly storing a firearm is punishable by up to 1 year in jail. And obviously the young boy will not be prosecuted, although he probably needs some help of some type. Hopefully he's going to get it. And finally, our dumb criminal of the day. How many times have we said, don't live stream the crime scene. Don't put illegal stuff up on the internet. You will be arrested. Yes. Please meet Jacob Percival. He jumped over the fence unlawfully and entered the enclosure while another subject filmed an event in the alligator habitat at Busch Gardens. Now, he originally jumped into the alligator habitat to film a video. And guess what? Where was that video put? That's right, on social media. And then the investigators tracked him down and arrested him. They had a warrant for probable cause that issued for his arrest. He was charged with burglary, theft of services, and trespass. So apparently, not only is he not very smart to go get in with the alligators, he also doesn't have any money. And he's even dumber for putting it up on the internet. And the theme park, Busch Gardens, says, we will not tolerate this blatant disregard of our safety rules and are working with law enforcement on this matter. The safety and well-being of our guests, ambassadors, and animals remains a top priority. I understand Busch Gardens. Next thing you know, we have a gateway crime here. You're jumping fences to get into the alligator pit where you could be eaten and probably a little Darwinism taking place and you'd be eaten up. Or guess what? Next thing you know, you're going to be jumping turnstiles, cutting in line at the concession stands. It is a gateway crime. Strict enforcement is necessary. All right, sir. You are a dumb criminal of the day. All right. Thanks for joining us. Please join us tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. We're going live. Have a lot to talk about. Taking your questions and your calls. We'll see you tonight.